The following programming is sponsored by Mark J. Bernstein. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group. Entrepreneur, author, and financial consultant Mark Bernstein helps high-performing entrepreneurial business owners create a vision for the future and follow through on their goals and intentions. Ange Honorato is a business growth strategist who blends psychology and business together to create conscious leaders and business owners who impact the world. Founders Forum is a radio show podcast sharing the real stories behind entrepreneurship as founders discover more about themselves while providing valuable lessons and some fun and entertainment for you. Now, here's Mark and Ange.
Good morning, America. How are you? Good morning, Arlo. And I particularly, every once in a while I say hello to Arlo. He's my dog, but that's particularly appropriate this morning. And our guest, I'm talking to George for a second. You may or may not know, but he was named after Arlo Guthrie. And that's why I say, good morning, America. How are you? So that's a little inside in case you didn't know all that. Anyway, so it's not always sunny in Philadelphia. Today is one of the days that it's not. And thankfully so, because we've just come out of this big kind of heat wave. So a little break in the action is not too bad. So we have a very interesting guest, very interesting show today, so I don't want to delay, and Ange Honorato is here with me today, and Ange has a topic she'd like to open the conversation with.
Yeah, you know, Mark, you and I always try to kind of find a relevant topic, something that's relevant to our lives, business, or really current events, but, you know, it struck me this morning when we're looking at what is happening in current events right now on the presidential candidate stage, around the need to be able to identify new talent and for any circumstance, right? So it really has me thinking, obviously, around what we do here with founders, as well as the importance of having the right talent in a business. And so I'm curious what you think and our guest today about, you know, as a founder, how is that parallel between the need to identify rapidly changing needs and skills in a business, right? And how do you go about assessing the right talent, not just hiring additional hands, but how do you prepare for that as a company builds and scales and grows and matures? So I know you've got some thoughts on that in your business and would love to hear from our guest also.
Well, interestingly, I was having this conversation yesterday with an industry consultant about the possibilities of the expansions that we need to do in our company and talking about how they help choose talent and advise on that. One of the things I've found helpful over the years, and it's worked pretty well with several of the employees we have now, is I use something called the Colby Profile, Colby Test, developed by Kathy Colby, which looks at people's unique abilities, which is something we've tried to do in our business and we're continuing to do, which is really focus each individual on what energizes them and what they do best, because then they stay in the game longer, healthier. We're going to talk a lot about that today because it's relevant to what our guest is going to speak about. And they do what they do best and build the whole team, the whole company around unique abilities. So I've found that as a helpful tool. George, who I'll introduce in a minute, I wanted to ask you about that because I know you've done much of the same in your own company. And let's hear what you have to say,
yeah,
and then
sure.
We'll get into your story.
You know, it is something that's always top of mind. And, you know, I think it's really important as a, you know, a startup or a company where we're 6.5 years old to look forward, right? And how do you anticipate not just where you are, but where you want to be or where you need to be? And I think making sure people have that sense of not just accepting the status quo, not just being content with where things are. So I love dreamers. You know, I love to have that spirit as part of our team. And it's in our profession is very challenging because there are certain labor shortages. There's zero unemployment in veterinary medicine. But I think that relatability, not just focusing on animals, but the true people servers are really what's important. And how do we select talent that can grow that and develop that and kind of keep it going forward.
George, one of the reasons I'm excited that you're here today is because of your forward-looking nature. And you may or may not know this, but the name of our company is called March, my financial services company. And our slogan is March Forward. And my brand, under which the Founders Forum comes, are called Forward Focus Forums. I have a group called the Manufacturers Forward Focus Forum. It's on my cup So I'm all about that. And the things I do charitably and philanthropic wise are based on that kind of forward-looking approach as well. So because we have entrepreneurs on the show, I would say that's true of most everybody. And partly that's how we select our guests, so it's no accident. But you particularly have been very forward-looking in what you've done. So with no further delay, why don't we get right into that? So let me introduce you. Dr. George Melillo is the founder and chief veterinary officer at Heart and Paw, a corporate veterinary practice with 28 locations in 10 states. He graduated, and this is how he came to Philadelphia, from the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine in 1985. And prior to starting Heart and Paw, has experience as a private practice owner in Delaware County, PA, as well as 9 years of corporate practice at Mars, which he'll talk about a little bit. He's also been part of 2 previous startups in human pharmaceuticals. So welcome, George.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here today. So tell us a little bit about your story. I know your interest in animals and veterinarian practice started early in your life. So tell us about that and how that evolved.
Sure. Yeah, I was definitely one of those classic kids that's all I ever wanted to do is be a veterinarian. So from a very, very early age, that was my sights were set on that, and everything was, you know, very to accomplish that goal. I was fortunate through high school, you know, I wrote letters to vets saying, hey, can I come and work with you? And one local gentleman actually took me under his wing, and I worked all through high school full time for him, and he could not have been a better mentor. He's actually still practicing at 87 years of age in West Haven, Connecticut, and I talk about him
every week.
It is. It's amazing. You know, obviously, when I came to Philadelphia in 1977, first time I ever set foot in the city was the day I entered the freshman class at Penn. I graduated in 1981, and I stayed on for vet school. You know, I've had a lot of opportunities owning a practice with a classmate of mine. And, you know, after a while, after about 10 years, I ended up selling my interest to him, and I walked away from the profession for a little bit. And a lot of that was some compassion fatigue, which is very common in our profession. But I was always licensed, and I always would see relief patients and take care of animals.
Can I mention something you told me? Compassion fatigue is a big issue.
It is.
And in fact, the suicide rate you mentioned to me among veterinarians, you always hear about dentists, and it's even higher.
We've supplanted dentists, and you know, there's studies that have said 1 in 6 veterinarians have contemplated suicide, which is a real struggle. And one of the things that's unique is that of those veterinarians that contemplate it, we're much more apt to be successful in kind of getting the end result.
What's your assessment of why they find themselves in that state?
Yeah, I think they tend to be very compassionate and empathetic. I mean, I always say veterans, I think, have the noblest hearts in the world. They value life the way the world doesn't understand, let alone respect, and it can be very challenging. It can be very challenging to know you can treat something, but it's limited by a finance of a situation. There's a lot of burnout, you know, especially during COVID, where there was more patients we could not see, and having to say no just really weighs on the doctor's heart. Thankfully, things are getting a little better, which is a good thing. But the other thing is, I think when veterinarians, we are trained to prevent and end suffering. So when we are suffering, we have that background of knowing there can be a resolution to that. So. Mm.
Yeah, that's a little different than regular medical practices. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe one of the reasons as well is people really love their animals, and not that they don't love their people as well, but doesn't that have something to do with it too?
Well, people love their animals.
Pressure.
And again, that's part of why we started Heart and Paw. You know, 6.5 years ago, there was a lot of talk about the millennials, okay? And they said the millennials, they're not having children. Their animals are their trial child, their only child. And the data supports that. But it's people my era that also own pets differently, and pets really have become part of the family. So our thought was, you know, what does it really mean to treat a pet like a member of the family as a veterinary practice? And prior to starting, the analogy I used is, you know, I have 5 millennial kids. I never would have left one of those kids under anesthesia at CHOP and walked out of the building. But veterinary practices have asked clients to do that all the time. So our what if they can wait? What if they can stay? And what if when I'm done, I can, you know, with a dental, I can come out and say, her mouth's wet, there's blood where I took that tooth out, and she's whimpering. But if you're up for it, I want you to come back and recover with us. And the beauty of that is, to me, as part of treating a pet like a member of the family, we embrace minimal stress handling. Some people use fear-free. To me, it's we try to minimize the amount of stress on the animal. So if an animal smells its owner, is talked to by its owner, is rubbed by its owner, it is less stressful. But the other thing benefit is I want the client to see we are delivering health care to a member of their family. And the equipment that goes into monitoring, the nursing that goes into recovering a pet, the fact that that veterinarian may be typing medical records, but she's got her stethoscope and is ready to be at stake for her patient. And I think we've hidden that for a long time. So
because of all of that, you got out of practicing for a while.
I did.
Tell us what you did at that point.
Yeah, so I stepped aside, and a lot of my compassion fatigue was triggered by having a very sick child. Who is doing well now. He's 28 years old. But it gave me the opportunity to kind of do a startup company with my father in Human Pharmaceuticals. It was a contract sales organization, and we sold that very successfully. And I really enjoyed the corporate aspect, which I was surprised at. I never had a business class in my life. So I really enjoyed that experience. And when we sold that, my brothers and I started another company providing pharmaceutical, marketing, teledetailing. We put together small contract sales. Whatever the opportunity was, we found a way to do it. We sold that surprisingly about 4 years in, and then I took a pause. I did some nonprofit work. I have four children I adopted from Latin America, so I did work with that. But I was very curious about corporate veterinary medicine.
Something else we have in common, because I have an adopted child from there as well, but... So I have a question about that, because obviously you're a compassionate person. You did that, you worked with animals. So at some point, it sounds like you might have missed the veterinary practice or missed aspects of it.
I did. And I was always, through that time, I was always licensed, and I always kept my CE. I would do some relief work. I would take sick care of, certainly, most veterinarians. We take care of a lot of people that call us up. Or if you meet people, they're always asking for advice.
By the way, I haven't asked you. You must have your own animals, right?
I do. I have what I refer to as my last dog, who's a 14-year-old Jack Russell rescue. Smartest dog I ever had, but the most challenging dog I've ever had.
And he's really your last dog?
He's my last dog, yes.
You know, I will tell you, I have probably my first and last dog. I had a dog for a brief period as a child. We've had, since I've been married, we've had cats, love the cats. Mm-hmm. But I was the one that always wanted a dog. And when the last cats died at like 17, my wife finally said, time for you to get a dog. And I was like, it was during the pandemic. So she said, now you have time to take care of them. I said, yeah, but it's not going to be like this forever. So we had to work out our arrangements. So we got a puppy. And I will tell you, I can't imagine loving a being more than this dog. And I say he's my last dog because when he passes... assuming I'm alive, I can't imagine going through that. I will tell you, I'll make it public here, though. I figured out that he and I are turning 77 at the same time.
Wow.
So you're invited. Ange is invited. I'm having a big, it's Cinco de Mayo 2034. So I've given away my age. But we're having a big party. And my son will be turning 39 all within a month. So Cinco de Mayo is right in the middle
of
everyone's
awesome.
Birthdays. So we'll have a tequila and biscuit party. Go ahead, Ange. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I think this is there's a flip side of this with the last dog is that my dog has now become my father's dog, who is 87 years old.
Oh, right.
And my dog has given my dad such a new lease on life that I keep telling her she'll be 12 this fall. And I'm like, you're going to be 12 forever because, talk about the compassion thing, but it gets him, he's walking three times a day. It's just total companionship. And I just think that, I'd love to, after the break, I know we have one coming up, but I would love to hear, George, a little bit more about how this new vision that you've brought into Heart and Paws on the compassion side and bringing the family into that business and how you see the trends, you know, going from here, because I think you look around the world and everything is more pet friendly, right? Because I think we are recognizing the need for mental health. And if that's helping your veterinarians kind of reduce that number that you talked about, mm-hmm. you know, that. So I'm really curious about those things when we come back from the break, Mark.
So, Ange, you are prescient because it's break time. So we'll be back in a minute to see what happened next in George's life and where he's going from here.
At Heart and Paw, we believe your pet's wellness goes beyond veterinary care. Thoughtfully designed and digitally enabled, Heart and Paw delivers high-quality, low-stress veterinary care, dog daycare, and pet grooming. We know that your pets are family and that the best care starts with trust between pets, their people, and our care team. Founded by Dr. George Melillo, Heart and Paw's approach to veterinary medicine revolves around preventative care. Whether your pet needs a vaccine, an x-ray, or just a fun day at daycare, we're ready to give them whatever they need to lead their happiest, healthiest life. With 28 locations across 10 states, Heart and Paw is here for you whenever you need a partner in your pet's care. Visit heartandpaw.com or download our app to find a location near you where we'll treat you and your pet the way you deserve to be treated, like family.
We're back here on Founders Forum with Dr. George Melillo. And George, we were just talking about the last things you talked about were you worked for a nonprofit, and then what happened?
Well, then I was very curious about corporate veterinary practice. So I joined Banfield, which is part of Mars Veterinary Health, back in 2009. And, you know, I remember coming home my first day and saying to my wife, this is not going to work. And she's like, what do you mean? It's one day. And I said, you know, well, they're giving things away. Some of the vaccines don't make sense. And if a client's late, their first response is, oh, they have to reschedule. She said, well, just treat it like your own practice. And I did. And so I went in. I said, look, I'll never use these vaccines, so don't bring them out. If a client's late, the doctor who it was scheduled with would say, oh, they have to reschedule. And I would say, time out, put them in a room, I'll see them. And what that experience taught me was that they were not bad people. They were not bad veterinarians. They just didn't know any better. There was no sense of mentorship. There was no oversight. So I spent a year there teaching that art of practice and loved it, whether it was teaching surgeries, client communications. And as a result, I rose up kind of the leadership rank. So I ended up spending 9 years at Banfield. I really enjoyed the first seven. There was a kind of a change after that, and it caused me to actually leave, because what I would see is that the best and brightest doctors, they would come and join us, but 5 years in, they were looking to escape veterinary medicine, not just Banfield, whether they wanted to go in industry or get their MPH. Everything but what my mentors did, which was to serve communities for decades, serve generations of families. So that was really the goal behind Heart and Paw. How do we create a place where doctors can be healthy, happy, and successful? And so we kind of looked to reimagine that. And at the same time, back to Ange's point, you know, what does it really mean to treat a pet like a member of the family? Because, you know, the whole human-animal bond, we're in a society where it's really hard to, you know, to build connections. And, you know, you look at the youth and the isolation and some of the challenges we see. We look at isolation in elderly people, right? And there's more and more evidence that animals have done a very good job at well-being of people. And I think we're just scratching the surface on what that looks like. I remember COVID, right? The world was told, stay away from your friends and family. And many people gravitated to their animals. And I would argue animals did a really good job at filling a lot of the gaps that built connections. So.
I think Ange and I can both attest to that for sure.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about Heart and Paw is that it's a co-owner model. You might want to talk about that.
Yeah, so we're just starting that. So we always wanted that. We are private equity backed, so there was a little bit hard time convincing that. We went through a kind of a recapitalization in January, and they're so forward thinking with us. And so that's going great. Forward, we are co-ownership. I'm very passionate.
A little unusual for private equity, right?
Yeah, they were bought that's into great. It. And a lot of it is, you know, there are labor shortages. So having that doctor who's anchored there, we start with the doctor. Where does she or he want to practice? And we'll find a location. We'll be entering our 11th and hopefully 12th state in 2025, which is great.
And by the way, your 28 locations, and we're going to talk later about your future vision, but if you said 3 years from now, how many locations do you anticipate?
In 3 years from now, I'd love to see us close to 50.
Great. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Probably up and down the eastern seaboard.
So average of one per state, even if you're not in every state.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's great.
Exactly.
Love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's so far. So what seems to me, looking at it from the outside, we've talked about this a couple times now, is that the doctors are a lot happier, the patients are happier. You've mentioned to me how you involve the families of the patients in the process. Mm-hmm. Might want to talk about that a little bit. And obviously, you're getting happier, healthier animals and pets.
We deal with all life and death issues in veterinary medicine. The doctors, they do seem to be happier. I mean, well-being for me, the biggest thing I can provide our doctors well-being-wise is autonomy. You know, let a doctor have a control over what their day looks like, what their week looks like, what their career looks like. And it's not one size fits all. And that was one of the challenges I found in other corporate groups. So coming here, we never wanted to have everybody be the same. Quality medicine is essential. Okay, but it's not just one way to practice quality medicine. As far as the animals, I think that
they're almost like customized practices.
Yeah, they can. They're creating their own culture. They're creating their own identity. They're part of selecting and picking the people that fit with the vision of that location and fit within that community.
That's wonderful. Just mention quickly. I know Andrew's going to have a question for you about this, but the challenges you've had in building that, because you're really doing something outside the box that really hasn't been done. What kind of challenges have you faced?
Yeah, I mean, when you're starting with a blank piece of paper and an idea, it's very challenging. Things like identifying initial systems and whether it's practice management software, whether it's choosing equipment, whether it's looking at real estate and kind of what can work in a situation. I mean, I think what was critical was I have several people. Many I've worked with 15 years or so that kind of were captivated by what we were trying to build and were right there. And I always say, you know, seven of them were there with me from day two. So it's not something I did alone. It's really with people that I trust. And I knew they, you know, shared the same heart and the same desire and the same purpose in a lot of ways. But they could also look ahead and look at what, you know, our practice was really a response and, you know, how do we do things differently? And how do we reimagine pet care?
It's really, on the show, we get to talk to a lot of people in innovation. You know, many of them are technology people and things like that, but innovation can function at every level. This is another great example.
Absolutely. And yeah. We were very much, you know, embracing technology, not resistant to it. So, you know, putting everybody on the same practice management system, looking at AI for diagnostics. Uh-huh. You know, I feel we've always been ahead of the curve. But we also realize the consumer today is different from, you know, when I had my practice in the 90s. So they want to book online, right? They want text messaging integrated into the records. And I feel if we didn't embrace those things right from the start, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Yeah, that alone might have held you back, yeah. I would think. Exactly. Yeah. Ange, go ahead, Ange.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's so fascinating, not just what you've built from a technology and operational efficiency and reach and location and all of that and this new approach. But, you know, keeping with the theme of talent, I think that, you know, you mentioned, George, one of the things about kind of a labor shortage in the industry. And, you know, I've seen this in so many different industries over the years, and we're seeing it in first responders and, you know, that burnout, you know, systemically. But I'm curious your thoughts on, because there is such a gravitation towards people needing and wanting, you know, more of their pets and treating them as a family, what is your opinion in terms of how to, you know, I find that labor shortages don't start with the labor. It starts with introducing people to come into the field at a very young age as a career, right? Like the way that you did.
Yes.
We talked offline about my niece who's been in this space as an entrepreneur since she's three. What are your thoughts on how to position it and get people to understand that this could be a very, very lucrative, but also just a life-fulfilling kind of field to come into in the first place?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Ange. I am very passionate about really highlighting it's a great time to be a veterinarian. As you say, pet numbers are going up. People are spending more and more on their pets. And I think it's really opening the doors and the ideas that this can be a great avenue. We do work with a couple schools in Philadelphia, especially promoting diversity in communities that, you know, they may never have seen a veterinarian of color. And how do we promote that from a young age? And so we're very actively involved in that. I think a lot of it is keeping doctors in the profession, too. Fortunately, there's a lot more new veterinary schools that are opening up. So there's going to be one across the river in New Jersey at Rowan University, which is pretty exciting. So I feel that as we be messengers, for too long, this veterinary career was not seen as viable. 8 years of education and the earning potential was never the same, and it never probably will be the same as human medicine. But that doesn't mean it can't be a very lucrative position. And I always tell my doctors, you know, I want you to be financially successful. And I use that word because they're the top 3% educated people in the world, or MDs and veterinarians. And I always tell them you should, you know, have a nice home, travel wherever you want to go, support whatever charities, hobbies, and feel good about it. And they almost need permission to do that, which is kind of, a big part of my passion, really empowering them. And seeing that veterinary ownership, you can own a very successful small business and generate wealth for your family.
George, we were talking about your 3-year vision in terms of the business before. And I know you have a personal 3-year vision because you had an illustrious career. You have a big family. You've got animals. You've got a lot going on. What do the next 3 years look like for Dr. George Malillo?
Yeah, I think, for me, getting back to our growth mode, so adding new locations. We added one in 2023. We're adding one in 2024. But then I can see us adding, 4 or 5 in 2025, and then get to a state where we're adding 10 at a time. So that's kind of the goal. I personally want to scale back a little bit. And it's interesting, this past week, we obviously saw, a decision made by a president to step away and let the new people take it over. And I feel as a founder, it can't always be here. If I create something successful, it's got to live beyond me. So I want that to happen while I'm still there if needed. But I love to kind of sit back and watch this amazing team of talent that I've been part of bringing to Heart and Paw, or just keeping at Heart and Paw. I want to see what they do. And I want to see them do things not just George's way.
Right? Last question, because we always have so much fun on the show. The time goes quickly and we're out of time. But thoughts on your legacy? It's perfect follow-up.
I think my legacy is I just would like to be known as somebody that loved the profession and did something good about it and made it more attractive and more sustainable for people to enter and have long careers. And I do think being able to serve pets for years, to me, my heroes are not, what I do is not as hard as what my teams do, which was to serve communities for decades and to be at the front for clients, pets, and their parents. And those are my heroes. So it's just seeing them do it in a way that they are happy, healthy, and successful.
You have a great gig serving your heroes who are serving theirs.
Exactly.
Dr. George Malillo, thank you for being here today on Founders Forum. Ange, thanks for being here. TJ, thanks in the engineering booth. And we'll see you all next week on Founders Forum.